Now, some time ago, perhaps it was at a council meeting, we had addressed the possibility that a sudden illness or the like could prevent Pastor from doing a church service at the last minute. He wondered if someone might have a sermon tucked in the back pages of their Bible and be able to deliver it at a moment's notice. If I remember correctly, someone in Pastor's family did indeed keep a back pocket sermon ready for just such an occasion. Even after that conversation, though, I'm not sure any of us here have something quite that ready at hand for any given Sunday, although I have heard stories that it did happen here one time. I have a drawer at home, though, that has messages that I have given over the years, and I told Pastor that I could use one of them. Now, of course, and Pastor would also tell you this, that when you use a message that was presented many years ago, it might need a little touching up. With all that being said, I have chosen this morning to use one of my Old Testament character studies. This one is on the book of Nehemiah. I have stolen the title from a book written by Chuck Swindoll. And this message on the book of Nehemiah, I am calling Hand Me Another Brick. If I took a poll this morning of the Old Testament characters that you might most identify with, I suspect from those of you I would hear names like David or Moses, Abraham or Daniel. Perhaps you would more identify with Jonah or Job. I imagine no one here would choose Nehemiah. So today, we'll take a look at Nehemiah's book and see why it may have been included in the books of the Old Testament. A little historical background to the book will help introduce the story before we get to my original message. The book opens in the Persian city of Susa in 444 BC. The book of Nehemiah coattails on the book of Ezra. Ezra led one of the earlier returns of exiles back to Israel. Most of the book of Nehemiah centers on the events after the journey to Israel. But that is not where it starts. It is also the last of the historical books of the Old Testament. While many of the books of the Old Testament follow Nehemiah in the canon, note the year 444 BC. We often refer to the silent period of the Old Testament, which we acknowledge to be the 400 years or so after the prophet Malachi. The events we see in Nehemiah are very close to the beginning of that silent period. Nehemiah was a regular guy. Well, almost. He wasn't a priest like Ezra, and he wasn't a prophet like Malachi. But he did serve one of the Persian kings, which made him, I guess, royalty, sort of. Now, we certainly aren't serving any kings, as did Nehemiah. But we would consider ourselves regular guys, I would suspect. We should enjoy hearing stories that show how regular guys can come through. At least we should be challenged by those stories at any rate. The story of Nehemiah is a story of a man who saw a need and how he worked to make that need happen. Isn't it great when we become part of a group that has identified a need and we find members who are willing to step forward and face the work involved? I'm sure we may also, somewhere in our lives, have been part of a group where members disappear when the planning and the work need to be done. Perhaps we were some of those members. As we examine Nehemiah, I hope we can be encouraged to find and use some of our own resources and skills to better our spheres of influence, even when we feel we are only regular guys. Nehemiah takes on different roles as the book progresses. His first is of royalty, working in the king's palace. Although we will see his role in royalty is not particularly glamorous, his next role is that of labor, as he identifies his mission in Israel, and he finds himself directing that effort. And finally, the role of politician, as he becomes governor of the city. Nehemiah was born to exiles, parents who were taken from the Holy Land and into captivity many years ago. Thus, Nehemiah never lived in a free world situation, but he did have a heart for the homeland. Technically, it was not even his homeland, since he had never lived there. But the stories of Judah must have touched his heart as he was growing up in captivity. Yet even later, in his palace years, The yearning for the ancient homeland must have burned strong, strong enough to convince Nehemiah to leave the life of the palace to face the unknown in Zion. This is his story. I will attempt to present much of the remainder of this message in the first person as if I were Nehemiah, just no costume. If I slip out of that perspective on occasion, I apologize to all of my former English teachers. I was the king's cupbearer. My most important responsibility was to test all of the food and drink served to the king to make sure it wasn't poisoned. It would be an easy way to dispose of a king you no longer cared for, wouldn't you say? If anything had been poisoned, well, long live the king. But it's a quick way to get rid of a cupbearer. Next to his wife, I was in quite a position of trust in the king's household. Yes, I still feel quite well. This wine will be fine for the king. I shall take it to him in just a few moments. You may have already been made aware of it, but I have not told you my name. I am Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah, a Jew of the exiles. You may have heard of me. Ah, yes, Nehemiah, good. I'm still in here. Anyway, today I'd like to fill you in on a little bit about myself, why I'm included in your Bible, and apart from my spot in biblical history, what my story may mean to you in your world today. As I said, I was a cupbearer to the king, a very important role to play in the life of a king back in the Old Testament days. Probably not as important of a job today, although I have heard rumors that your president Zachary Taylor back in the 1800s may have been able to use my services. But that is speculation, and those theories were finally cleared up not too many years ago by something called DNA. Not too sure what that means, to be honest. Anyway, I can tell you that I did not make it into the Bible because I was a cupbearer to the king. So what did I do to make the cut? Well, there was this wall. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I was visited at the palace one day by my brother Hanani and some men upon their return from Judah. I inquired as to how the Jews that returned to Jerusalem were doing. You see, even though I had never lived in Jerusalem, somehow I had a heart for the people in that region. They informed me that the remnant there in the province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach, and the wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are burned with fire. When I heard these words, I sat down and I wept. Secretly, you see, I wanted to be known as the weeping prophet, but the title had already been taken. Who knew? Before I go further, let me give you a little more history. I'm Jewish by faith. My people, for many years, had not kept God's word. Even though we were in the land God had given to our forefathers, Abraham, Moses, and their generations. Slowly but surely, other gods began to replace the one true God in our lives. For this, and countless other continuing sins, God set his wrath upon us. In the days of our King David, we had been, for a time, one people. But as the years went by, differences split us into a northern and southern kingdom, not dissimilar, I would say, to your time of civil war. And as our enemies closed in around us, we could not, or should I admit, would not, help each other. Eventually, Assyria conquered our northern brothers. Then Babylon destroyed our southern kingdom, leveled our temple, and flattened our city walls, killing many of us, and taking many of the rest of our people to their homes as slaves. Fortunately, I saw none of this, for I had not yet been born. But I heard the stories. They clung to me as a chain around my heart while I lived the early years of my life in captivity. Yes, true, I have escaped some of those chains as I now enjoy life in the palace. Yet, while my outward body was clothed in a form of royalty, my heart was still in chains. But we knew we worshiped a God who was great and all-powerful, and who would someday break all of those chains and lead us back in safety into our own country, with our own people, and surrounded by the safety of our own walls. walls were suddenly becoming the refrain of my life. I was a cupbearer to King Artaxerxes, and please don't ask me to spell his name. I was a cupbearer, not a royal sign maker. But he was not a Babylonian, as were those who captured us those 100 years ago. Persia had since conquered Babylon, extracting some revenge for our people, yes, and it served the Babylonians right. But now the Persians, you see, had no real issues with the Jews. King Cyrus himself had allowed some of us to return to our homeland, well, what was left of it. Ezra the priest was among those who returned. So is my brother Hanani. And they did a good work, for I heard they had rebuilt the temple of God so that the people could worship him and only him, as we had done in our ancestral home. Many of us, though, did not go back right away. The journey was far, it was dangerous, and we would have needed to rebuild almost everything. And for some of us, that seemed too much. No, to many of us, home was now in Persia. And many, like myself, had a decent occupation. But still, did not my heart burn at times for that piece of history that had been our gift from God, Jerusalem, and all the land around her? Now I had family who had returned and could tell me stories of our homeland, Hanani, my very brother. Yet somehow, what he told me broke my heart. The people are in great trouble and disgrace, he said. The walls of Jerusalem are broken down. The gates are burned. The people were still not safe from their enemies. When I heard these things, I wept. I mourned and I fasted. I prayed to God for months that these things might be changed. Now it was time for me to do something. By this time, the king had noticed my sadness. Why is your face sad, though you are not sick? He asked of me. This is nothing but sadness of heart, he then said. I should have been afraid to present my sadness in front of the king. But I answered him that the king lived forever. Why should not my face be sad? When the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate, and its gates have been consumed by fire. The king then replied to me, well, what would you request? I prayed that God would give me the words to say. I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. And then I waited for his response. He looked at me and asked, how long will the journey be, and when will you return? God had answered my prayer. The king was letting me go. I proceeded to ask for letters to be drawn up that I could give to the governors of the lands that I would have to pass through, and also a letter to the keeper of the king's forest, so that he may give me timber to build the gates of the fortress and the walls of the city. The king granted these letters to me because the good hand of God was upon me. The king also gave me army officers and cavalry. I was going home. Not everyone shared my joy, as I soon found out. Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arab, leaders of some of the surrounding territories near Jerusalem, were not pleased. They had had their way in our homeland for many years and did not want to see anyone coming around and looking out for the welfare of the Jewish people. With my position in the king's house, the possession of letters of passage, I was able to make that trip home. My trip home went well. Once into the city, though, I sensed a hesitation among the people to begin a new project, such as rebuilding the walls. Maybe it was just me, but it would certainly have seemed to make sense to rebuild the walls to protect that which my countrymen had worked so diligently to restore. It was common to build walls around cities for protection from enemies. Everyone had them, everyone but us. I was not sure what caused the hesitation. Were they afraid of the work, the opposition, perhaps the lack of materials? Have you ever come across this in your life? You see a project that could be, even should be, undertaken, but realize that too much effort is often wasted in trying to avoid or explain away the situation rather than addressing it. Yet I had not come this far to abandon my project so soon. I decided to choose a few good men men who would be just as excited about my project as I was, and who could encourage me and help me to plan. We did our initial work under the cover of darkness, so as not to reveal our intentions right away. We went out by night by the valley gate in the direction of the Dragon's Well and onto the refuse gate, inspecting the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were consumed by fire. Then I passed onto the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was no place for my mount to pass. So I went up by night by the ravine and inspected that wall. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. Upon returning from our inspections, I assembled all the people, the nobles and the priests. Then I said to them, "You see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach." And I told them how the hand of God had been favorable to me, and also told them of the encouraging words the king had spoken to me. I set before them my project. I urged them to rebuild the walls of the city. I told them that I would lay the first brick, and I laid the challenge at their feet. "Who will hand me another brick?" Then they said, "Let us arise and build." A need was identified, a situation assessed. Plans were drawn, and the work was begun. Another project successfully completed. Thank you very much. No problems. Okay, truth be told, there were problems. Did you ever start a great work only to find eventually you were up against a wall? No pun intended. An unforeseen or even a foreseen difficulty sneaks in and threatens the whole thing. So what do you do? Early on in the rebuilding process, it was going quite well. And I could recite the list of all my bricklayers, but we would be here all day. If you should like to employ one of them, check out their references in my book, Chapter 3. There's quite a list there. Everyone was willing to pitch in, helping with the walls, the gates, whatever needed to be repaired. Even the priests, who normally don't get their hands dirty, if you know what I mean, were helping. It was at this point we began to see some outside resistance to our efforts. For now it came about, when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and very angry and mocked the Jews. He spoke in the presence of his brothers and the wealthy men of Samaria and said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish it in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones?" Now, Tobiah the Ammonite was near him and said, "Even what they are building, if a fox should jump on it, he would break the stone wall down." A strong Jerusalem, see, was not in the best interest of the surrounding nations. But work continued even through the mockery, and we were able to build the wall to half of its former height. For the people had a mind to work. Now when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the repair of the walls in Jerusalem went on and that the breaches began to be closed, they were all very angry. All of them conspired together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause a disturbance in it. The threats had gone from merely verbal to the threat now of physical violence. Who amongst you has not seen opposition? If you haven't, it may be that you have never been a threat to anyone else. Those of you in leadership roles should know what I'm talking about. Even if that role has been limited to parenting, we all understand about making unpopular decisions. And opposition usually brings problems. Thus in Judah, it was said, "The strength of the burden bearers is now failing." Yet there is still much rubbish. "And we ourselves are unable to rebuild the walls," the people started to say. Now our enemies said, "They will not know or see until we come among them, kill them, and put a stop to the work." When the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times, "They will come up against us from every place where you may turn." But we prayed to God, and because of these threats, we set up a guard against them day and night. Then I stationed men in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, the exposed places, and I stationed people in families with their swords, spears, and bows. When I saw their fear, I rose and spoke to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fights for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. With prayers for strength, and with our new guards in place, our work was able to continue, and before too long, the walls were being built again. We had only to set the many gates in place to complete our project of protection. It was then that I received a message from Sanballat and Geshem saying, come, let us meet together at Chephram in the plain of Ono. Now I suspected they were planning some harm to me. Was it right of me to question the motives of someone who was proposing to negotiate a conflict? So I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work. I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? I had to admire their persistence, though. They sent the same message to me four times, and four times I gave them the same answer. The fifth message from them was different. Then Sanballat sent his servant to me in the same manner, with an open letter in his hand. In it was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshmu says that you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Therefore, you are rebuilding the wall, and you are to be their king, according to these reports. And you have also appointed prophets to proclaim in Jerusalem concerning you, the new king of Judah. And now, it will be reported to your Persian king according to these reports. So come now, let us take counsel together. I ask you, why are leaders with even the best motives targets for charges such as these? How best can you prepare yourself for such rumors? And what can be done when they are leveled at you? Then I sent a message to Sanballat and Geshem saying, such things as you are saying have not been done. But you are inventing them in your own mind. For all of them are trying to frighten us, thinking they will become discouraged with the work, and it will not be done. But now, God, I ask strength for my hands. I realize they were trying to frighten me, perhaps to get me to commit some real sin. Then they could report that back to the king. Yet I would not bend. I prayed once again, Lord, strengthen my hands. And the bricks kept coming. For 52 days, around the entire city, a wall that was built even through the opposition. Just 52 days to rebuild the wall. Not bad, I would say. The gates were eventually placed, and the wall was completed on the 25th of the month Elul in 52 days. When our enemies heard of it, and all the nations surrounding us saw it, they lost their confidence, for they recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. A project that was years in the making was finished in less than 2 months. How does that even happen? With God, nothing is impossible. And for a time, these enemies left us in peace. But I think you know how the rest of the story unfolded. In the meantime, God put it on my heart to assemble the people and to read to them the old scrolls and the genealogies, and a revival took place. All seemed well. But by the last chapter of my book, you could see the old sin patterns returning. It seems as if we never learn. This is not where I want to leave you today, though. So why am I here? Encouragement. Would the walls have been rebuilt if I had chosen to continue to live in the king's palace? That's revisionist history. Maybe best left for people of your generation. But I am here to say to you, pray about your visions. Pray about being a leader. Look for support from those above you, from peers, but mostly from God. Then be ready for opposition. That's where prayer comes in. Prayer will also help in determining if God is behind your plans and whether you should jump right in or take it in small steps. Once the king gave me the go-ahead, I was all in. Maybe you are not a leader, though. Will you be a good follower? Could the walls have been finished with only my enthusiasm? It was only through a willing workforce that the work could move forward. If followers lose heart, the project can also be lost. So followers, take your fears and hesitancy to God. What are the walls you may be wishing to build or rebuild? Can you lead or will you follow? Bring all of your plans before God and listen carefully for his response. Thank him for entrusting you with his work. And now come, let us commit to begin or to continue a good work. And on the way out today, hand me another brick. Amen.